I don't know about you guys, but after watching those baptisms, I feel like we could just go home, right? I mean, that was fantastic. Can we give it up for them one more time? So cool to see you guys in your shirts, Brenda. So awesome to see you guys. We're in the middle of a study. We're in the middle of a series, and we're studying arguably Israel's greatest king, and that's David, right? And today we're looking at something that should be at some point, if not now, relevant for every single one of us. And that's this right here, that the ways of God are most unappealing and seemingly irrelevant when we're angry, isolated, or afraid. That the ways of God are most unappealing and seemingly irrelevant when we're angry, we're isolated, or we're afraid. These three conditions really have the ability to undermine the most faithful of the believers among us, right? They have the ability to cause you and I to crash through every moral and ethical boundary that we've set up in our life. I think if we really thought about our greatest regret, if we all got around a table and we thought about our greatest regret, I think we could trace it back to one of these three things: anger, isolation, or fear, right? And this is why. The reason is this. Whenever we're angry, whenever we're alone, whenever we're afraid, we feel compelled to do something, don't we? We like to take things into our own hands, don't we? And that only makes things worse. That only makes things worse. And we end up angrier, lonelier, and scaredder, right? David really, as we're looking at the life of David, he had two major failures in his life. One when he was 50 years old. And that's the one he's really, really famous for. That's the one we're not going to talk about today. But that's the one that everybody knows about. The second one was when he was in his 20s, and he's really not as famous for it, but we're going to look at that. Last week, Justin talked to us. We learned about David and Goliath, and he kills Goliath. Well, after David kills Goliath, he becomes really, really famous over all of Israel. He's 15 years old, and King Saul at the time starts to get jealous, right? And so what does he need to do? He needs to control the situation. And so he goes, how do I control the situation? If I get David into my family, I can control the situation. So he offers David one of his daughters to be married to one of his daughters. And David, he refuses as a 15-year-old. He humbly refuses King Saul. And he says, no, I'm not worthy to be in the family of the king. I'm not worthy to be in the family of the king. And so he humbly refuses. And Saul, for these next little while, is constantly trying to control David, constantly trying to manipulate David, trying to figure out how can I make sure that David doesn't become more popular than me, right? Well, something happens. David ends up falling in love with a different daughter of King Saul. It's Michal. And he ends up marrying Michal. And then not only that, but he becomes best friends with Saul's son, Jonathan. So now he's married to Michal. He's best friends with Jonathan, Saul's son. And so now Saul can try to manipulate, try to control him. And for the next 7 years, this goes on and on and on. Saul becomes more and more and more jealous. So 7 years of this goes on. He ends up just kind of getting sick of it. He comes to kind of this point where he's like, I have got to get rid of David. And so he decides he's going to try to kill David, but he doesn't want to let people know that. And so he sends them on these impossible missions, right? Whenever you don't like your son-in-law, this is something that you do, right? Just, I need to kill my son-in-law. Just send him on these impossible missions, right? And so this is what he does. He sends his son-in-law David on these impossible missions. Well, what happens? David doesn't die. He ends up succeeding. He succeeds. And not only that, so instead of coming back less popular, he comes back more popular. And so Saul is getting angrier and angrier and angrier. And every time he sends David on these missions, he succeeds every single time. And here's the other bad part, is that Saul's own daughter, David's wife, and his own son, Jonathan, David's best friend, keep tipping David off. Every time Saul tries to arrest David, every time he tries to kill him, right, no big deal, they tip him off every single time, and David slips away. Well, it culminates at this dinner this one night, and Saul has had enough. He's like, I'm sick of it. I'm sick of it. Everybody's on David's side. Nobody's on my side, and my own son, right, is helping David. And so he has this dinner, and Jonathan tells David, don't come to the dinner because my dad's really mad at you and he might try to kill you at dinner. And that's not going to be a fun dinner party, right? And so David doesn't come to dinner, but everybody else is there. And Saul just, he boils over. And this is what he says one night at dinner. It says, Saul's anger flared up at Jonathan. And he said to him, this is Saul's son. He flared up at Jonathan. He said to him, you son of a perverse and rebellious woman, you, right? Can you imagine? His wife was at the dinner probably, right? And she's like, I'm right here. You can just say my name, right? He says, you son of a perverse and rebellious woman, you. Don't I know that you have sided with the son of Jesse, which is David, to your own shame and to the shame of the mother who bore you. Like, he's not letting this lady get away, right? He says, as long as the son of Jesse lives here on earth, neither you nor your kingdom will be established. And see, because David was anointed to be king, right? And Saul was king, and his son should become king next, Jonathan. And he's basically saying, as long as David is alive, you won't be king. As long as David's here, you won't be king. And Saul says, now send someone to bring him to me, for he must die, right? So Jonathan ends up, he doesn't go get David. What he does is he tells David, dude, you've got to leave the city. Like, my dad wants to kill you. In fact, you don't even need to leave the city. You need to leave the country. You need to get out of here. This is not a safe place. And so David, when this happens, David is 22 years old. He's angry, he's isolated, and he's afraid, right? He's all by himself, and he did nothing to deserve this, and he decides to take things into his own hands. And this is where things start to go wrong. And it's easy for us to ask why, right? Like, why, David? Why didn't you just trust God? Why would you go against what you know? Why would you go against your ethics? Why wouldn't you just trust God? And I mean, there's been a lot of people that have asked you and I the same question, right? And I think if we thought really, really hard, let's be honest, you could look back in your own life and you could ask yourself the same thing, couldn't you? I mean, why would I go there? Why did I buy that? Why did I stay over? Why didn't I leave? Why did I call him back? Why did I say that, right? Why did I run away? I mean, what's going on? It's really, really simple. When we feel angry, isolated, or afraid, we panic, don't we? We panic. There's all these emotions and there's all this stuff going on. We panic. And David panicked as well. It says this. It says, David went to Nob, to Ahimelech the priest. Ahimelech was the high priest at this time. In this culture, they had the high priest set up, and they had all these different priests for their religion. And so he was the high priest. He was the big dog. And David would often go to Ahimelech to get advice or to get prayer or whatever he needed to do. He would go to Ahimelech. It says, David went to Nob to Ahimelech the priest. Ahimelech trembled when he met him and asked, why are you alone? Why is no one with you? And that's a kind of a weird question for us, right? But it wasn't for Ahimelech. He had never, ever, ever seen David alone. You see, David was kind of important in Jerusalem. He was kind of a big deal. And so he couldn't just walk around by himself. It wasn't very smart. He had a lot of enemies. He'd killed a lot of Philistines, a really big one, in fact. And so there was a lot of different things where he couldn't just walk alone. In fact, wherever David went, he had 1,000 soldiers that went with him. 1,000 soldiers. So whenever David would go visit Ahimelech would hear him coming from a little ways away, right? Like, oh, David's coming. There's David and his 1,000 men. And so it says, Ahimelech trembled when he met him and asked, why are you alone? And David lies. He doesn't tell him the truth. He doesn't say, well, Saul's trying to kill me. David lies. And it's just interesting that he lies because he knows he shouldn't lie. They follow the Ten Commandments. Were part of their law, right? That thou shalt not lie, right? And so they knew that he was supposed to do this. And another side note that's kind of funny, the Ark of the Covenant, how many of you guys have seen Indiana Jones and the Ark of the Covenant? It's exactly like that. Get that exact picture in your head. That Ark of the Covenant was there with Ahimelech. It was in the same building complex. It was in the same place. That's where the high priest was. The Ark of the Covenant was there. And a cool thing, the Ten Commandments would have been in there. And so thou shalt not lie, we're inside the Ark of the Covenant, right? Right there, while David is like, I'm going to lie, right? And so David lies. David answered Ahimelech the priest. He said, the king sent me on a mission. Okay, a mission. And said to me, no one is to know anything about the mission I am sending you on. As for my men, the 1,000 men that I usually travel with, I've told them to meet me at a certain place. And you can imagine Ahimelech is trying to figure this out. Like, I don't know, this seems kind of weird. Like, a mission, right? Like, a certain place. I don't really know what's happening. That lie would cost Ahimelech and his whole family their life. That lie would end up costing his family, not David, but Ahimelech and his whole family, their life. It says, now then, David says this, now then, what do you have on hand? Give me 5 loaves of bread or whatever you can find. And so he's hungry. He's trying to figure out the food situation because he's on this mission. But the priest answered David, I don't have any ordinary bread on hand. However, there is some consecrated bread here. This consecrated bread, just to let you know what this was, consecrated bread at the time, these priests, the high priests, would bake bread, and then they would offer it up to the Lord, and they would sit it on the altar. And it was kind of a way, as an offering to the Lord, it was this hot bread that they would sit there, and then in the morning, they would come in, and they would get the bread, and that was their food for the day. And that's what fed them. But it was consecrated, it was holy, and to eat it, you had to be consecrated and holy. So David wasn't allowed to eat this bread. So the priest gave him the consecrated bread. And David asked Ahimelech, don't you have a spear or a sword here? I haven't brought my sword or any other weapon because the king's mission, oh yeah, the mission, right, David? The king's mission was urgent. He's like, do you have a sword or a spear? Because I'm like the best warrior the world's ever seen, but I forgot my sword. Ooh. Forgot it. Do you happen to have a sword, Ahimelech, the high priest? And this next part is honestly, it's pretty poetic. This should have been a moment where David's eyes kind of opened. This should have been a reminder that he wasn't trusting God, that David was taking things into his own hand. This should have been that moment where he goes, oh, I should probably take a step back and trust God and instead of taking that, but he doesn't do it. And this is what the priest says. He says, do you have a sword or a weapon? The priest replied, the sword of Goliath the Philistine, whom you killed in the valley of Elah, is here. It is wrapped in a cloth behind the ephod. If you want it, take it. There's no sword here but that one. Isn't that kind of a weird moment, right, in David's life? David, see, when David killed Goliath, he, as a 15-year-old boy, he ended up keeping that sword as a souvenir. And not only that, but he ended up dedicating that sword to the Lord. He gave it to the high priest and he dedicated it to the Lord. It's kind of a way to say, hey, I killed this giant, but it wasn't me. It was God. That I trusted God in this situation. That God came through in this situation. That I put my faith in God in this situation. And he's the one who gave me the victory. I mean, can you imagine all the memories that would come back to his mind at that moment? There's no sword here. The only thing we have is Goliath's sword when you're 15, right? I mean, think back to the memories that would come in. David walks into this valley, and he faces a giant that's 9 feet, 9 inches tall, and he faces this giant, and he yells out to the giant, I'm going to kill you, and then I'm going to feed your flesh to the birds of the air and the beasts of the field so that everybody knows that it's God who is in charge, that he's the Holy of Holies, that he's the leader of the world. And he actually says this in Samuel 17:47, a little flashback. Says David says, all those gathered here will know that it is not by sword or spear that the Lord saves, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give all of you into our hands. Right? I mean, that's 15-year-old David. What happened to that David? Where did that David go? I mean, that David trusted God in whatever he faced. He doesn't run, right? He stands firm. His faith is in God. Where did that David go in this moment as he's lying to Ahimelech and running away and taking things into his own hands? I'll tell you where that David went. It was fear, anger, and loneliness. fear, anger, and loneliness. These three giants have the ability to cause us to forget about all the other giants that God helped defeat in the past. These kind of cloud our judgment. These kind of come in and they cause us to forget about all the amazing things and all the times that God came through and all the victories that we have when we trusted God. 1 Samuel 21:9, David said, "There is none like it." He's talking about this sword. "There is none like it. Give it to me. Give it to me." David runs from Saul. He lies to the high priest. He's taken things into his own hands. And just like last week, this is where our story starts to intersect with the story of David. You see, when we need God the most, we are least likely to lean into him. When we need God the most, we are least likely to lean into him. For some reason, we are tempted to run away from God instead of run towards God. For some reason, we try things that never work. You guys know what I'm talking about? We try things and we try them. Maybe this will work. Maybe this will fix my situation. And we see this in other people all the time, don't we? Why did they do that, right? Why would they go there? Like, that makes no sense. Like, I mean, how stupid do you have to be? Like, why would they do that? Why wouldn't they leave? But it's hard to see in ourselves, isn't it? Why? Because we've convinced ourselves that our situation is different. Well, why would you do that? You just don't understand. I mean, you don't really understand why I did this. I mean, you can't really understand because you're not me, and you didn't know what happened when she said that and he went over there, and you don't know why I went there. If you were in my shoes, you would have done the same thing. You don't understand what I'm going through. You see, David thought the same thing we've all thought. He thought the same thing we've all thought. If God were here with me, this wouldn't be happening. If God were with me, this wouldn't be happening. And here's why. Here's why we think that. Because it's so easy to trust God when we have nothing to trust him for. It's so easy to trust God when we have nothing to trust him for. And what I mean by that is this. When things are going great, how difficult is it to trust God? I mean, how difficult is it when things are going amazing, things are going great, how difficult is it to come in here and to worship God with all your heart, right? I mean, it's easy. How is it to serve? Like, it's so easy to serve God and to serve others and to do what God's called you to do when things are going great, right? It's so easy to say, hey, I'm going to pray for you and actually pray for people when things in your own life are going great. You see, it's a lot harder to trust God when the things we value start to fall apart and slip away. It's a lot harder to trust God when the things around us start to crumble and the things around us start to fall apart. David ends up fleeing to a cave. He's angry, he's alone, he's afraid. And he ends up coming to his senses a little bit, and he ends up going back to Israel, and he goes and finds a prophet, and he tries to get some advice on what to do, right? He wants to make things right, but at this point, it's too late. I mean, really, the damage has already been done. The damage has already been done. You see, when David met with Ahimelech, remember when he met with Ahimelech and he lies to Ahimelech? There was someone else in the room, and his name was Doeg. And he was Saul's chief shepherd at the time. And Doeg, Saul's chief shepherd, ends up telling the king everything that happened between this exchange between Ahimelech and David. How many of you guys have ever played that game, the telephone game, where you whisper into somebody's ear and then you goes around the circle, and by the time it gets back, you're like, no, that's not what I said, right? The camel does not have three humps, right? Whatever it is, right? This is kind of what happened, except for a shorter version. Doeg overheard what was happening, but he didn't hear, like, everything. He didn't get it exactly right. He missed out the big part where David is, like, telling a lie to Ahimelech. He missed that whole part when he tells the king. And so Doeg says this. He said to the king, "Ahimelech inquired of the Lord for him. He also gave him provisions and the sword of Goliath the Philistine." Basically saying he fed him and he armed him. And he sent him on his way. Then the king sent for the priest Ahimelech, son of Ahitub, and all the men of his family who were the priests at Nob. And they all came to the king. And this is what Saul says. He calls all of the priests there. So it's like 80 people. It's packed out. And Saul said to him, "Why have you conspired against me, you and the son of Jesse, giving him bread and a sword and inquiring of God for him? So that he has rebelled against me and lies in wait for me, and he does today. And you have to imagine, I mean, Ahimelech is like confused, right? He's like, "What are you talking about? I have no idea what you're talking about. I talked to David. He's on a secret mission for you or something weird, right? And his men were going to meet him somewhere. I don't know what you're talking about, Saul." Ahimelech answered the king, "Who of all your servants is as loyal as David, the king's son-in-law, captain of your bodyguard and highly respected in your household? Was that day the first time I inquired of God of him? Of course not." He's saying, is that the first time I've ever met with David? No, you've never had this conversation with me before. What's going on? "Let not the king accuse your servant or any of his father's family, for your servant knows nothing at all about this whole affair." But the king said, and check this out, "You will surely die, Ahimelech, you and your whole family." And then Saul goes on and he orders his chief of his soldiers and the general. He says, "I need you to slaughter all of these people." Ahimelech's family, his sons and all their kids and all their daughters. And here's what's interesting. They actually refuse. They were like, no. "We're not going to lay a hand on God's chosen high priest. On these are holy people. We're not going to kill them. We're not going to do what you're telling us to do." And so Saul looks at Doeg, and he says, "Doeg, you do it." And this is an opportunity, right, for Doeg to kind of rise in the ranks of Saul's and maybe has some favor with Saul. Doeg goes on and slaughters every single one of his family members. He kills Ahimelech and everybody in the family. And then not only that, but Doeg goes to the city of Nob. He goes to the city of Nob, and he kills every man, every woman, and every child. So not only did he lose his whole family, he lost the whole village because of one lie. It says, "But one son of Ahimelech named Abiathar escaped and fled to join David. He told David that Saul had killed the priests of the Lord. Then David said to Abiathar, 'That day when Doeg the Edomite was there, I knew he would be sure to tell Saul, I'm responsible for the death of your whole family.'" Not just a whole family, David, a whole village, right? A whole village died because of the decision you made to take things in your own hands when you were angry, isolated, and afraid. You see, taking matters into our own hands feels good. It feels good. It's like, man, I got control of this situation. I can handle this. It just doesn't always turn out good. Before we go, I want to ask you guys a few questions just kind of about how this story intersects with our story. You see, this is common for all of us. Maybe when our anger pushes us to do something, right, that we wish we didn't do. We get so worked up and so mad and so angry that we do something that we look back and we're like, "Oh, why did I do that? Why did I do that?" Or maybe in our isolation, we start to fantasize about stuff that we wish we weren't fantasizing about, or we know we shouldn't be thinking about. I want to ask you a couple of questions here. What is your anger, isolation, or fear causing you to consider that you've never considered before? What is your anger, isolation, or fear causing you to consider that you've never considered before? Maybe it's relationally, maybe it's financially, maybe it's physically, maybe it's an old habit, right? You've kind of reached your breaking point and you're so angry that you've got to figure out something to subdue your anger. So you know that if you just, you know you shouldn't go back into this old habit, but maybe if you do, it'll make things better, right? What is your anger, isolation, or fear causing you to consider that you've never considered before? Number two, who is your anger, isolation, or fear causing you to consider that you know you shouldn't consider? Who is your anger, isolation, or fear causing you to consider? You never called him back, right? But you're thinking about it now. You've never called him back, but you're thinking about it now. Because of what's happened in your life, that person wasn't an option, but they look pretty good now, right? You know you shouldn't, but you're starting to consider maybe they'll fix my feeling of being alone. Maybe that'll help this situation. Number three, who besides you do your considerations put at risk? Who besides you do your considerations put at risk? When you're in the middle of making a decision out of your anger, isolation, or fear, who's being put at risk the most? And I mean, I can tell you who that is. It's the people you love the most. And it's the people who love you the most. I mean, some of you guys know what this is like firsthand, right? You grew up in a home where your dad maybe would have these anger outbursts, and it kind of affected you, and maybe he didn't realize it was affecting you, but it was affecting you because decisions that he made out of his anger affects the people that you love the most, don't they? Whose future hangs in the balance because of the decisions you make out of anger, loneliness, or fear? Whose future hangs in the balance because of the decisions that we make out of anger, loneliness, or fear? And the fourth one is this. What advice would you give to someone who is you? What advice would you give to someone who is you? What would you tell someone who is going through what you're going through? You see, it's easy to give advice to other people, isn't it? I mean, it's like, well, I can see somebody's telling you a situation and you're like, okay, I know exactly what you should do. But for some reason, it's really hard to give advice to ourselves when we're angry, isolated, or afraid. David ends up giving us some amazing advice as we're looking at this, as we're wrapping up. He ends up giving us some amazing advice, not 22-year-old David. Not when he's in the cave, not when he's lying, not when a whole village has died, but this is later on in life when he writes the Psalms. This is what David says in Psalms 9, verse 9. It says, "The Lord is a refuge for the oppressed and a stronghold in times of trouble." It says that the Lord is a refuge. The Lord is a refuge. Not a chemical, not a drug, not alcohol, not money, not a person, not an affair, not a new car, not new debt. None of that is a refuge. And that's the stuff that we turn to, don't we? We end up turning to those things and we look back and we're like, what was I thinking? Why did I do that? Why did I go there? Why was I with that person? And David's saying the Lord is a refuge for the oppressed, a stronghold in times of trouble. In the next verse, those who know your name trust in you. Those who know your name trust in you. For you, Lord, have never forsaken those who seek you. For you, Lord, have never, and you can imagine as David's writing this, maybe he's thinking back to that moment where he lied to Ahimelech and he's sitting in the cave and he's like, God, I thought you had forsaken me. I thought you had forgotten about me. I thought you left me alone and I was angry and I was isolated and I was afraid and I thought you had forsaken me, but I was mistaken. You see, in those moments when you think you're forsaken, can I just tell you, you're mistaken. The Lord is your refuge and he's never forsaken those who seek him. Don't make that mistake. A thousand years later, after David's long gone, his most famous descendant comes onto the scene. And he looks into the eyes of some angry, isolated, and afraid Israelites, and he says this. He says, come to me. He says, come to me. You see, when we're angry, isolated, and afraid, don't we have the tendency to run away from God? We take things in our own hands and we do what we think we should do and we handle things the way we think we should handle it. Well, they treated me this way and you don't understand, so I've got to do this and he said that to me and so I got to make sure he knows that he's not right and I'm afraid and so I got to make a decision based out of my fear, right? And Jesus is looking at you and he's saying, hey, don't run that way. Come to me. Come to me. And then he says this, come to me, all who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. There's some of you guys here this morning who you're just tired. You're running around. You're trying to handle things yourself, and it's been years that you've been trying to handle it all by yourself, and you are tired, and it's not working out. In fact, if you look back and you trace back all the stuff, you go, I've actually made things worse. Like there's things that are worse because of the decisions that I've made trying to fix my problem. I have more problems because I'm trying to fix this one problem. And Jesus says, come to me, all who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. He says, take my yoke upon you and learn from me. For I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light. My yoke is easy and my burden is light. Can I just tell you this morning? When you feel forsaken, you are mistaken. When you feel like God's left you, when you feel alone or angry or afraid, he hasn't left you. He just wants you to come to him. He just wants you to run to him. Instead of running away, you run towards. You see, there's some of you here today that because you're angry, isolated, or afraid, you're contemplating some decisions that aren't best for you. You haven't made those decisions yet. You haven't made those decisions yet, but you're contemplating them. In your anger, in your isolation, and in your fear, things are starting to run through your mind, and you're going, maybe if I just went there, or maybe if I just did that, or maybe if that just happened, or maybe if I just had that kind of a person, my life would be a little bit better. Can I just tell you right now? God has not left you. He's not forgotten about you. But when you take things into your own hands, it only makes things worse. Can we stand? I want to pray with some of you guys. I'm going to ask everybody that nobody's looking around, everybody kind of close your eyes and bow your head. I just want to talk to you for a second. For those of you who are here that you just need some prayer and you'd say, John, right now, I've been contemplating some decisions out of my anger, isolation, or fear, and they're not the right thing, and I know it. And I know I shouldn't be thinking about them, but I got to be honest that they're running through my mind. And I haven't done them yet, but I'm afraid that I might do them the next time this happens. And John, I don't want to do them. John, I want to run to God. I want to run to God and say, God, okay, I trust you with this situation. If that's you this morning, would you just slip your hand up and down and you just say, hey, I'm dealing with some stuff. Yeah. God, we love you so much. God, we know that all of us deal with these emotions, this anger, this isolation, this fear. God, but we know that you're in control of everything. We know that you're bigger than all of it. God, I ask right now for each person as they're walking through a storm, they're walking through a season, they're walking through a circumstance, and they're thinking about making some decisions that aren't best for them. God, I pray that you'd give them the strength and the hope right now to make the right decision, to do the right thing, that when they look back and they tell this story to their grandkids, they get to tell the story that they trusted you, that they trusted God, that they put their hope in God, that they didn't put it in an old habit or in a person or in a drug or anything like that, but they trusted you. I pray that they would leave with strength and encouragement today. God, we love you so much. Jesus' name, amen. If you need extra prayer today, I want to encourage you, make your way down to the front. We got some people that want to pray with you. We'll see you guys next week for part 3 of David. God bless.